Hello, and welcome to the live Printing Impressions webinar, Mythbusters, Comparing Offset 2.0 versus Digital Presses for Short-Run Static Jobs. I'm Mark Michelson, Editor-in-Chief of Printing Impressions and the host of today's event. We all know that digital printing captures most of the headlines today when it comes to commercial and even package printing operations making new investments to meet customers' ever-increasing demands for short-run output. Sure, digital output devices enable personalization capabilities, but we also know that the majority of jobs that print providers run on their digital presses are static, not BDP work. What many print providers are realizing is that sheet fed offset and cut sheet digital presses are not an either-or situation. They can be very complementary in nature depending on the specific job and finishing requirements. And advancements in make-ready speeds, reduced startup paper waste, and getting sellable sheets quickly on today's newer sheet-fed offset models enable cost-effective short-run printing. Of course, the crossover points of what gets run digital and what is run offset can vary from print shop to print shop. Here today, we have two printing company owners who operate digital and traditional sheet-fed offset presses, as well as Heidelberg Anticolor offset presses that are tailor-made for short-run printing. Today's speakers include Taylor Blackwell, owner of Walker 360, located in Montgomery, Alabama, and Mallory Mele, owner of Mele Printing in Covington, Louisiana. They have joined us today to discuss how they decide which jobs run on which equipment in their shops, and in the process may help dispel the industry myth that short-run static work should automatically end up being output on your digital printing gear. Both Taylor and Mallory will first briefly describe their individual operations to help set the stage for today's webinar topic, which is sponsored by Heidelberg. Then we will move into more of a Q&A format, open discussion followed by an audience Q&A at the end, time permitting. So please don't hesitate to submit your questions throughout today's hour-long event. But before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions during and at the end of the hour, so you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all the widgets on this console can do and how you can customize your experience today. Okay, with that said, let's start out with Taylor Blackwell providing a general overview of Walker 360. Taylor?
Good afternoon. My company is Walker 360. We're located in Montgomery, Alabama, and we have a secondary office in Atlanta. We have sales of about $7.5 million with 39 employees. We're located in the state capital, so we do a lot of association-type work, state work. We have a good niche in the financial sector and also do a lot of work in the Christian ministry field. One thing a little bit different from us is we have an ad agency front end, and then we also have a specialty in analytics, as well as the printing. On the printing side, we grew up as traditional printers. For the last, the agency side, we just morphed into in the last 7 years. But the printing side, we came up as traditional printers, if you want to click on that next slide there. And we didn't have a big digital presence at all until several years ago when I bought a small digital company, and that got us into the digital world. So we started out with big presses and have always had either half-size or full-size presses. You can see our equipment list there. And now we run a mix of sheet-fed, offset, and then have two digital biz hubs, and then miscellaneous bindery, full mailing and fulfillment, and we also do some wide format as well.
So Taylor, when you bought that digital company, did you bring their equipment and their people in-house, or did you leave that as a separate facility?
We did. We brought it in-house. We kept all their employees. They had an web-to-print solution at the time that really not very many people were doing. This has been about, well, about two digital companies, actually. I bought one about 8 years ago and a second one 3 years ago. And the first one was doing online ordering, and we maintained that and continue to this day with this niche of business they have. The second one, I inherited an Indigo, HP Indigo 1000, and so that was my first foray into digital printing, and then some wide format equipment with the second one, and then we eventually traded out that equipment and rearranged and sold off what we didn't think we needed, and kind of reconfigured our press configuration. And our Anacolor, we've had about 5 years. We were one of the first, less than five, I think we were number three in the country, install with the Anacolor technology. And I was a real, I had a hard time buying into the high-end digital boxes, the Indigos, the NexPresses, and the iGens. To me, the numbers never really totally worked when you considered the quick charges and buying the machine, the quick charges, the ongoing maintenance, and then you still had to, pay for everything else. And so I went from my Anacolor replaced a half-size 6-color 74, and we had already had the XL105 a couple of years earlier, and so it's a great complement to my big press, and it's a great complement to my digital work.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Taylor. Mallory, what can you tell us about Mealy Printing?
Good afternoon. Mealy Printing's been in business for quite a while, 29 years, and I'm a little bit more of the traditional. We started out as a quick printer, one-man operation. And then over time we grew, and like most back in the 80s and early 90s, we had multiple locations throughout the New Orleans metro. We're in Covington, which is about an hour north of New Orleans. And at one time we had seven locations, and realized that was not a direction for the future. And as most during the bad economy, we started downsizing, and we're now in one centralized location. Which is fantastic for us, and so we're currently doing, we're on a pace to do $15 million this year. We've been very fortunate to grow in many sectors, a little bit more traditional as far as as a quick printer starting out, but then we quickly got into some commercial work. But digital has always been a part of our business. We do have Digimasters that we use for our black and white, and we have a big NexPress that we use as well. But our sectors really are more of the commercial type of printing for manufacturers, educational, financial, a variety, real estate, a big variety of client base that in our market we need to be very diversified. And so, and we also do political work, which we found a little niche there, and we do quite a bit of it, which means you got to handle the surges. You got to be able to handle it quick in 24-hour turnaround. The other thing we have gotten into in the last 4 or 5 years is we're into transactional work. We do statement work where heavy on the digital side as well as the mailing and inserting in that aspect. So that's been a good complement for us on our work and so forth. You can switch it to the next slide. The shot you're looking at right now is before we upgraded on a few pieces, and we do have an XL105 five color, and we have an Anticolor five color, and we have that. I've had mine about a year now, and we added it, and it allowed me to eliminate the mid press. I had a CD74, so similar to Taylor. we're doing strictly go from a 20-inch to a 40-inch, and that's been a good complement for us. And then we also have the print masters as well. We do have a jet press to print a lot of envelopes. And the next press, when we talk about comparing the two entities, you'll notice that we have a 3600 next press, which allows us to go to 14 by 26. And our big decision when we were looking at the Anycolor was I was at a point where I was maxing out my next press. Do I add another next press, or do I possibly look at a different direction and add capacity more on the print side? And that's the reason why we chose the Anycolor, because it gave us a lot more versatility, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And then we have the traditional bindery, and we're real heavy in the mail. We do a lot of mail, direct mail, and, of course, we do a lot of statement work as well. So we've been very fortunate in our efforts. We mainly have outbound salespeople going out. We have a lot of online portals that feed these mechanisms. The other thing is we have programmers on staff that write a lot of data. So the like Taylor and analytics, the data is driving a lot of our print media, which is a thing. And we're also found a niche in the fulfillment business. That's been a real nice niche for us, is a growth area for us, and allows us to be able to service customers abroad, not just here in Louisiana.
Right. Okay. Well, obviously, both your shops are both heavily digital and sheet fed. Taylor, can you maybe talk a little bit how you determine which static runs get run on which equipment? So, how do you determine what gets put on your digital equipment versus your offset gear?
Well, we have a MIS system that will determine a lot of that automatically when we estimate a job. But it looks at, and we can look at it manually as well, but obviously the size of the piece, our size is 13 by 18, it's the largest digital size we can print. The length of run, and the number of pages, and then the finishing, because, you know, sometimes if you can output it digitally in a book block, if the quantity is low, that's a lot less labor intense and quicker. Than having to print it offset and then fold it and collate it and all that. And so our estimating system will compare our digital presses to our Anycolor to our Excel, and then it looks downstream to see what the bindery implications are going to be, and it'll determine the most cost-effective way to run it. And then if jobs look like they're going to take either a lot of time on the digital press, because they're not obviously not as fast, then we'll secondarily look at the clip charges, because a set of plates for my Anycolor, if it's just a postcard or a flat sheet or a small brochure run, a set of plates for my Anycolor is less than $8. So it makes the crossover point when you consider clicks versus plates very low, and the and speed wise really doesn't make any difference to us on just flat work. I mean, we can produce it, you know, same day and next day on our Anycolor, same day and next day on our digital press. So there's no kind of a standard answer, you know. And then every once in a while, like right now, we're really, really busy, and so we just had a book the other day that was, you know, a couple hundred pages, and the quantity was like 600, which that is a big digital run for us, you know.
Right.
And it would have been probably a little bit easier if it had been offset, but we didn't have the time to get it through our bindery. So.
Okay. And Mallory, what about Amelia Perning? How are you guys determining what gets run digital versus offset?
Well, price to the customer is the key factor for us. It's such a competitive market out there. Everybody's wanting cheaper prices. So we're going to let our system, similar to Taylor, dictate the direction that we're going to take. But just a rule of thumb, where we talk to our customer service people and sales, is 500 or less today, it's 500 or less, we're going to shift to the, we're going to have it on our digital device. Anything above that will go to the Anycolor, say from 500 to 10,000 or 20,000. And then from there we go to the 40 inch. And that's a, before we got the Anycolor, it was more of everything up to 1,000 was digital. And we have definitely changed that very quickly. When the Anycolor came in, but a couple other key factors are is the substrate, what kind of paper we're going to print this job on. That really matters because these digital devices tend to not like certain types of substrates, and so when we're talking about an uncoated sheet or something that might give the digital device, the offset press really doesn't really get affected by it. Also, the amount of coverage. The coverage is a real important factor to us because a digital tends to, you know, at times, and we love our next press, but it might show some streaking or different things. And of course, the bindery, if you worry about cracking, we're definitely going to be doing this through the Anycolor. And on the Anycolor, you can coat. You can, you know, we have a coater on ours, so we can aqueous coat the piece. So really the key factor in real simple terms for us is 500 or more, we ship to Anycolor, and then 500 or less, we're keeping it on the digital.
All right. Mallory, we've you kind of addressed this a little bit, but what would you say are the biggest drivers in your shop in terms of determining that crossover point between digital and offset?
Well, Taylor also mentioned something's real factor is we do a lot of variables. So what we were finding before we had the Anycolor is that we were tying up the next press on doing static work. And so when you really had that variable data job, the next press was either down or booked or, you know, had to be serviced because it had so much volume on it. And now we're focused on just keeping real digital work on the next press, and the Anycolor can just eat up all that static work off of it, and so that's a big factor for us is that we don't like bogging the next press down with a big job. We like to always have that available to handle the true variable job, so we pushed it to really keep the Anycolor busy in running that work, and it, you know, the Anycolor doesn't need as much service, so it's in a different world and a different environment, so we really try to drive the Anycolor as much as possible. As long as it's not variable.
Do you have any ballpark figure on the digital work that does come in or that you do digitally, like what percentage of that would be variable versus static?
You know, I really don't know. I think that changed. I've heard statistics over the years that say less than 5% when it was originally. I'm going to say for us, about 20% to 25% is real variable on our next press today. There is a lot of, you know, fast things that happen where the bindery becomes a real effective tool,
right. Meaning
you're doing short-run books to have the digital be able to do it same day and pump it out. You know, obviously you can't go through the offset process with that. But we just really look at each job and how fast we got to get it out, comparison. But the quantity is one of the big driving forces for us.
Okay. Taylor, same question for you. What would you say are the biggest drivers in that whole crossover point decision-making process?
Well, obviously the price to the customer, like Mallory talked about earlier, but we do internally look at, you know, the cost we're outlaying in clicks versus plates or versus, you know, materials. And so sometimes we may quote a job to a customer and then end up running it a little differently because the value added to us is better sometimes if we shift it to the Anycolor and just pay for plates versus pay for a lot of click charges. And but time, we have, you know, our two digital devices are not fast. They're the 60 page per minute 6000s, and we have two of them that are exactly the same. And so we don't have the high-end production digital press like an Anycolor Next Press or an Indigo. Like an Indigo Next Press or an IGN. And so We look at time that it takes on the digital press, and then versus Anacolor. And we throw everything we can to the Anacolor. It's overall a lot faster, and it's easier to bog down the digital equipment.
Right. Okay, Taylor, which leads, you know, to the next question, sort of following up on the Anacolor. You know, with the Anacolor really is designed as a short-run press, even though it's an offset press. What benefit has that provided your business in terms of running work on that versus on your biz hubs?
Well, it is. The reason we got the press originally was to do very quick turnaround stuff. You know, I looked over, I can remember 5 years ago or 6 years ago, before we had the Anacolor, we had our XL105, and I looked over at our 74, and our estimating system was pushing most of the work towards the XL, because it was a lot faster just in speed and make ready than our 74. And I looked over, and I can remember seeing, you know, jobs all stacked down next to the wall, and they were, every job was, you know, 6 inches or maybe a foot tall. And he was spending most of his day in making ready, because the runs were so short for him. And so by getting the Anacolor, it dramatically sped up. I went from two shifts on my 74 to one shift on my Anacolor. And then it also cut down on spoilage, on waste. You know, as printers, you know, vendors will say things a lot of times, and you go, yeah, that's, you know, I'm not really sure that's the, in real life, if that's the way it is. And Heidelberg talks about being able to make ready in 15 sheets or 20 sheets or something like that. Well, this press can do it all day long. And what's really fascinating is you can take a sheet that's solid coverage, make ready and run your 500, then turn around and make ready on a letterhead that has one spot of color somewhere, and you're still making ready in 10, 12, 15 sheets. It doesn't have to cycle through and change out the color, get rid of the solid or whatever. And so for jobs that just have to cut or have very little bindery, you can reduce your waste on it. So it really sped up the process and cut down on labor. We can get a lot more jobs through faster than we used to, and just been better all the way around.
One of the questions that came in from one of our readers that kind of fits in with this is, you know, what would you say would be the maximum number of jobs that you can get off your Anacolor in a single shift at Walker 360? I guess that can really vary, obviously, with
different
types of jobs.
We had, I should have checked to see what this was, but we're entering a customer right now that they've done this before. There is 79 different brochures that all have runs anywhere from 500 to 4,000. And it's just coming in the shop right now. But we've done other jobs like that where jobs had, you know, 40 plates or 60 plates. Not, they were a progressive job. They weren't the same job with that many plates. It was like multiple brochures. And it took, my pressman was laughing one day because he said it took him longer to bend the plates than it did to hang the plates and run the job. So it was so quick in making ready and running the jobs that he was spending more time bending plates than actually running the job. So I don't know what the answer to that. We've never kept up with it.
Right. How about you, Mallory?
I can help a little bit with that.
Okay.
We do a lot of short run work, so we do a lot of postcards. And if you're basically on the Anacolor and you're running a common type of paper, size-wise and so forth, I wouldn't see it uncommon that you can't run 30 jobs in a shift. That seems a little unrealistic, but it's very true. I mean, we're make ready in 5 sheets, not even 20 sheets. Once you're up to color and you're running, you just basically, as long as it takes for you to put the plates on, get the press ready to go, and you're printing, and then you go into your next job. It's very fast when you line up the jobs. It's very fast and very efficient, and that's one of the things that we do. We try to stay on the same size paper, the same as we do on the next press. We only use certain size papers. We don't try and have the pressmen shifting sizes all the time, and it will pump. So on average, we're doing about 20 a day, but when we get into our heavy postcard season, we will be able to print out a lot, especially with the political work, where we're just pumping a lot of variety of jobs all day. It's also one other little advantage, I must say, it's probably the easiest press to teach someone who's not experienced how to run. Because you remember, you're not adjusting all your colors across, you're not making variances. Basically, you're putting the job on and you're running the job. You just got to learn about the paper and how it feeds and the characteristics of the paper. But as far as taking an unexperienced pressman, the anti-color is extremely easy to teach somebody how to get up to speed. Might even be easier than doing them on a digital device because of all the front-end technology.
Would you agree with that, Taylor?
I would. You know, my pressman says exactly the same thing. And also, my pressman that runs it has been with us 25 years, and this is his, I think, third press that we've gotten brand new for him. And he said this is the cleanest printing, easiest printing press he's ever operated. And, pressmen have to, it takes a little bit to get their head around that there are no ink zones that you can adjust on the press, and as soon as you pull off that sheet, that make ready sheet, you're ready to go. And it works well with our other presses. We can match between our XL105 and our digital press and have jobs that have some of both. They might have the cover on the Anticolor and the inside on the XL, and we can match those crossovers. But it does. It prints a very clean dot, and it's very simple to run. I tell you the other thing that's my pressman only runs it. It sounds crazy, but he only runs it at wide open speed. He runs every single job, even if it won't even cycle up to the full speed before the job's over. But he runs every job at 15,000 sheets an hour, and it's very quick. And something else recently we've started doing is we treat the Anticolor as a digital press in respect that when we bought it, we decided that we would never take it out of process ink. So we don't switch it between PMS and process. And I have a 2-color 52. It's the same basic size of that press, that Anticolor, that we were doing 1 and 2 color work on. Well, just in the last 6 months, we've started shifting all that 1 and 2 color work. We're just printing it in process on the Anticolor, and we found that it's quicker. The extra 2 plates don't cost any more. The PMS ink or the process ink is a lot less expensive than the PMS. You're not wasting time in washovers. And here was the other little trick: is we didn't tell the salespeople, and we didn't tell the customers that we were doing this. And we've yet to have anybody notice that we were printing something in 2-color, and now we're printing it in process and noticed that. But it's been a lot more efficient with us. We're so efficient on the Anticolor, it just was a lot quicker and a lot simpler to do that.
Now, very simple.
It's very similar to what you would do digitally.
That's very similar to digital. If you're running a 2-color job on your digital, let's say my next press, it's going to convert it to 4-color process, and it's going to produce that job, make it look like 2-color, but in fact it is a 4-color job. We do the same thing. Our salespeople would like to know about it, and so I've been through a little culture change with them. But we started producing it in 4-color, and it's gone over very well. Because it's just too easy to just put the 4 plates on and keep going. And so we definitely, I agree with Taylor, it's a very easy way, very easy solution. And if you want to give some added value to the customer, you almost can, you know, give them the full color for almost the same price, because in essence you're running it that way anyway. So
right. You
have a little added value there you can throw in with key accounts.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Were you able to convert any of those customers who were ordering two color to go to four color work?
Go ahead, Taylor.
I was just going to say that the trick is we don't, you can't give the four color work away for the two color price necessarily. Two color has always been traditionally a little less expensive. So we still estimate as if it was a two-color job, even though we might run it four-color, and internally it saves us some money. But we hadn't told them that it was in four-color, because then it would kind of depress our four-color pricing. I think Mallory's right. You know, the digital has done that to customers, because they were, you know, customers don't know or care for the most part how you produce something, and they were. And some shops were already converting stuff, putting it on a digital press. And so, you know, for them to be ordering something in two color and you producing it in process, you know, they don't know the difference. And most of them don't. And, you know, so but we still sell it at the two color pricing.
Right. You guys may or may not really answer these questions, but a few questions that have come in just related to some of the specs of the Anacolor press. One of the listeners wanted to know what's the maximum thickness of material that you can run through the Anacolor. Can you guys handle heavier stocks?
Taylor, I'm not sure if I know the specs on that.
I don't know either. I think we've run 12 point before.
We'll run heavier than that. I know we're at least going 14 point comfortably. I'm a little leery. When we start getting into the heavy, heavy stocks, I tend to want to look at the job a little bit. And if there's any question about it, I'll shift it to the 40. Because we have the XL, which is also has very little make ready. So we'll put extremely short runs on a 40-inch press just because it's just that type of job that you want that kind of caliber feeding mechanism and press printing it. So, and that goes up to 40 point. So I would be a little leery trying to constantly stick a heavy, thick paper through the Anacolor when it's meant to get jobs on and off all day long. That's just me as an operator.
Mm-hmm. One of the listeners chimed in and said 18 point. I can't verify that, but that's what somebody indicated. How about the plate life on the Anacolor? Can you guys comment on that at all? That was another question that came in.
It's really never an issue because most of the stuff is relatively short run. Because if it kicks in a bigger run, it both of ours kicks to the bigger press. So it's never, you know, it's never an issue.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We really don't discuss that on that particular press. We don't try to run it. Also, remember, we're using it for envelopes too as well. So we're running a lot of envelopes on the press, which does a great job, and so it gets a lot of versatility. But I would say 20,000 and below, we would not put a 50,000 run on there, only because we have the option of a much larger press.
All right.
And we've done runs as high as 150,000 on for envelopes on it. It does an exceptionally good job on envelopes. You need two operators. You need somebody feeding and somebody, you know, taking it off the other end. And but they get in a rhythm, and it's pretty dang fast, and feeds and prints really, really well.
How about the ink costs? How do they compare for the Anacolor, say, versus your traditional Heidelbergs? Is that a factor?
We use the same ink across. No, I mean, it's the same, and it's canister, so it's probably more efficient you know, you're not having ink left in the ink wells and very much, and you and it's the same type of ink. We use the same ink in our XL105 as we do in our Anacolor. But I hadn't seen any real big ink differences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not really using a lot of ink in comparison to the other, because it's making one revolution to put the ink down as opposed to constantly making revolutions. So I would assume that the ink usage is going to be less on the Anacolor than it would be on a traditional press, because you don't have as many make readies. You're not fighting color up and down. Stays very consistent. The cost of the actual ink, because it's a high-tech ink for that type of element, it's not going to be a commodity. You do have to have it, you know, you have to check your resources and make sure you get a good source for that ink. But it's never... We're not paying a premium for it. It's a very competitive price.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We've kind of got into this a little bit, obviously, with the previous question, but, you know, with the Anacolor technology in both your shops, what does that provide you from a competitive and a productivity standpoint? You guys obviously have mentioned some points, but anything more to add to that?
Just less labor. You know, it at the end of the day, if those 30 jobs that Mallory's talking about getting off in a shift, if that was taking a shift and a half or, you know, taking 10 hours instead of 8 hours, your incremental labor savings over time is hard to measure. But if you look at mine and Mallory's numbers, we are very strong in the sales per employee, and I think that's part of it. Like I said, I went from two shifts to one shift on my Anacolor, and you have to feed it. It takes a lot of jobs to bog it down because it's so quick.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I tell you. Go ahead, Mark.
No, I was going to say, I was going to ask you, Mallory, if you found that to be the same as well.
Yeah, part of our decision in getting the Anacolor was it was going to feed three elements for us, and this is where the competitive part comes in, is not only was it, do we get another next press, and we said, no, let's get something that does so much more, but it allowed us to take work off the commercial side, meaning high-quality work, off the next press, but also off of our quick printing. We don't bog the quick printing presses down either. So now I'm able to pull work off of it because, one, we're not putting heavy coverage on the small press, and we're not doing long runs on the small press, and we're not doing envelopes on the small press as much. And so we're running, you know, I have an envelope press for the two-color, but four-color we're talking about. We found that it's a very versatile press to be right in the middle of your production, to be able to pull from various areas that save us tremendously, especially on the labor. I agree with Taylor. The labor factor for us, we're running just one shift on ours, and it's pumping out the work, and it's, you know, it's never has a backlog.
Right. I think in one of our calls we had earlier, Mallory, you said that you were buying a lot of your four-color envelopes outside prior, which, you know, you're
right,
able to then bring that work in-house.
Yeah, I was able to save. We were spending, we were buying the, I'm going to call it the four-color envelopes. We were buying 20 and 30,000 at a time because we do a lot of statement work, and I was able to bring that in-house and save several thousand dollars a month in just that service. So that was also a nice incentive for us that we're able to pick that up and also be able to do the short run work.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the finishing side. Obviously, that's an important consideration, I would assume, versus what you run digital versus on the Anacolor or even on the your traditional offset gear. Taylor, could you comment a little bit about how much that comes into play in deciding what goes digital and what goes offset or Anacolor?
Well, things that things that fold or stitch or, you know, multiple pages, you know, whether something could come off as a book block, if you say it's spiral bound or if it perfect bound, it was super small quantity. If it, you know, our machines, our digital machines can fold and staple, you know, smaller run stuff. But if it has a lot of, you know, if it's roughly more than, you know, 300 to 500 and has to stitch, it's going to be pretty close to being better running it offset. And then sometimes we look at, you know, at the time it takes to collate something. And then, but if something mails, personalizes, or something, you know, has letters that have variable information in there, you know, then the digital would make more sense. But it you just kind of have to look at several different things to figure out where the best place is to run it. And to tell you something funny, when I put in the specs in my estimating system originally of the Anacolor, and we put in spoilage and make ready and all that, what started happening was we jobs that had to go to be folded or scored and folded or stitched after they went from the Anacolor when we first got the Anacolor is it needed so few sheets to make ready that we were running out of sheets, make ready sheets in our bindery. So we actually had to beef up a little bit our make ready sheets on the press, not for the press, but for the bindery. So that's kind of another area you got to look at as well, is, you know, what your overall spoilage is going to be and what what it's going to take down the line to finish it, how many operations it's going to take after the press.
How about in your case, Mallory?
The finishing, really, if it's something really critical, like we have a pretty picky customer and we realize the lineups are real critical, it's a several fold panel, we're going to stay with the traditional print process and stay with the Anacolor just because we know we can control it and know that we're going to have it'll help with the cracking, plus we can coat it. We can put an aqueous coating on it, so that will help protect the piece as we go through the finishing work. I know you can do that on an Express. We have a fifth unit on Express, but it's just not the same on that protection. And so we will tend to put the more critical stuff. Now, if it's, you know, 100 covers or 100 pieces, we will go with an Express without question, because if it causes us problems, we'll just go ahead and send it to the Anacolor afterwards, because it's not a real big risk factor. But what we find is that we're going to stick mainly, if it's heavy bindery, with the Anacolor, especially if it's got to do traditional bindery. If it's typical digital, like little short-run books, programs, things like that, you know what? The digital bindery does great. The Nexpress does great, and there's no factor there. It's just... Yeah, I think it really determines on the how complicated the bindery side is. Cutting digital is not always the flaking that you get from digital, that sort of factor. If you got a pretty picky customer, you could tend to have in a toner-based system, you can have a little bit of a problem there, whereas obviously the Anacolor or maybe the HP would be more liquid. It would certainly not be as much of an issue.
Well, let's move more to the back to the kind of the digital offset from the customer side. Do you guys tell your customers what you're running digital or offset? And I guess even if you did, would they really care? Mallory, do you have a view on that?
You know, that's a great question. I used to be very concerned about that in the beginning, but tell you the truth, we do not. Customers have no idea where we're printing it. If we have, again, that real critical customer, we will certainly discuss it in advance with them. But most of the time, it's back to that price. It's what's the best thing to produce. So when we're dealing with, let's say, an end user, manufacturer, or, say, an education customer, you know what, we're really not discussing it. We just need to make sure we understand the application, the usage, you know, this is something that's not going to go, if you're doing digital, you know, certainly don't want this thing sitting in somebody's car or heat's going to become a factor. But what we try to do is just talk to the whole customer about the job. And then, in fact, there's some advantages that you can have with both. But what we do on the digital side is you can show them a proof. And if they like what they see, you just go back and press and go on the digital side. And as well as the anti-color, we're still making traditional proofs when it comes to anti-color. But as far as the customer knowing, you know what, it's so competitive today, they want the most cost-effective piece, and that's what we find is most characteristic.
How about for you guys, Taylor?
We're the same. We don't tell people. We will sometimes get in a conversation if somebody's really picky. We have to pay attention to what they're printing. And we have had work before that we got in, and we saw that it was a really big solid, or I was going to have a critical fold or something like that on it that maybe we had quoted digitally, and we will tell them that we need to switch it to offset, and you know, maybe it might change the price. But typically, I would agree with Mallory. Most people don't know, they don't care, and it's one of the big things that I've been in the printing business for 23 years, and you know, printers love to talk about their equipment. I mean, we all love equipment and we love talking about it. You know what, our customers just don't care. They don't care what it's
right.
printed on. And so you know, it I've had discussions with customers who ask, well, are you printing this digital? And I'm like, why does it matter how I print it? And they'll say no. And I'm like, okay, then I'll just deliver it to you. Don't worry about how I'm printing it. So, I don't think they know or care.
Right. But they are obviously concerned with quality still, so but quality is still capable on both types of
sure,
equipment.
Sure, and I think, you know, go ahead, Mallory.
Let me add some to that. It's in the digital world, and some people might disagree, but basically repeatability is extremely difficult in the digital world because you have so many things that are affecting the digital. They could come in and do service. They could have an upgrade in software. They could change cylinders and do things that suddenly what you produced 60 days ago is going to be really hard to get back to that exact color again digitally. And so that's also a factor. You got to be a little concerned when you're talking about how picky they're going to be because repeatability is real important. And so whereas a traditional press, you're generally controlling that ink and water, you shouldn't have those many variables moving around and causing you that kind of problem. So it's not a major factor, but it does come up occasionally. Why am I hot yellow or hot red? And the digital people are moving so fast, it's hard to get critical printing through the digital process sometimes, and that's where we have to make sure we understand who and what type of job we're substituting either digital or offset.
You know, and I think the quality issue has become a non-issue. You know, it kind of happened in the offset world about roughly 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, 10 to 15 years ago. Where before that, the presses were really craftsmanship-oriented. You had to have a good craftsman. You know, our old 74 back 20 years ago, it took an hour to make ready. You average 5,000 sheets an hour. You know, you're playing with those ink keys because no settings came from pre-press. And then the new presses came along, and the settings came over automatically. The presses set everything up automatically. You could run to numbers more easily. The presses scan the color themselves. And in offset world, you know, the quality discussion kind of went away. Everybody expected quality. Well, then when digital came along, the digital quality to begin with was not good, and it was not very reliable. And so now that it's been, you know, whatever, 5 to 7 years or roughly since the digital has really taken off, the quality discussion for digital has gone away, I believe. And so now you don't have the quality discussions on offset or digital. People just expect it. So they don't really, that leads to them not really caring where the job is produced.
I guess that kind of goes as a good lead in to my next question from a standpoint of, you know, it seemed as digital has come on stream, there's been almost a panic among so many printers that, you know, they feel they need to have capabilities, assuming that a lot of that work is going to require personalization, but then they find out that a lot of times they're using their digital presses really just for short-run printing. What are your guys' perspective on that? Do you think that in some ways printers have been somewhat oversold on the need to have a heavy digital printing footprint?
Yeah, I do. I'm actually, the guys in my peer group will get a kick out of this because I've been on this, you know, this mantra for a long time. You know, printers love, we all love the next greatest thing and like to buy something and stick it in and know it's going to increase sales. And I believe digital was kind of one of those things when it first came out. And I think you had a couple things happen. One, it was kind of the new wave and everybody expected it just completely take over. But the second thing I think happened with digital is, you know, you had the big guys, the HP, the NexPress, and the IGN, and especially the HP, which the quality was so much better to begin with. Well, now what I call the second-tier level machines, like these biz hubs we have, the quality of those increased dramatically. And so you can now, quality-wise and almost production-wise, get by with a second-tier level digital machine and not pay for those really big, expensive machines and the maintenance that goes along with them and everything else. And, you know, to me, for the big machines, I never could get my head around the numbers of, you know, between buying the machine, clicks, maintenance, and then in 3 years or 5 years, you had to throw the thing in the river because it was worth nothing. And with your offset press, you can keep it for 10 years, and it's still worth 20% of its value. And if I don't run it, I'm not paying anybody. And so, you know, so I believe there's definitely a mix, but I don't believe it. You know, I do believe that printers have oversold themselves, and the vendors have done a good job. And, you know, the vendors originally were saying that, they were inflating the digital numbers by calling inkjetting digital. Well, heck, if that's the case, we've been doing digital work for 35 years, you know, because they were saying inkjetting was digital. Well, that wasn't digital. That was just mailing. And so, yes, I believe the whole industry got oversold on digital.
Hmm. How about you, Mallory? Do you have the same perspective?
I would agree to I agree to an extent that I believe in that. However, my NexPress or my digital device is extremely important. I would say we cannot survive without it. Even the second tier machine would be a little bit of an issue for us. That in certain markets or certain makeup of a certain shop, we have to have our machine, and when it goes down, it's a problem. And so, because when you have that surge of that variable data, you need something that can pump it out, and you need something that can handle a variety of stocks and sizes and so forth. So there is a definite need. Is it being oversold? Absolutely. It keeps coming out with newer and greater products, and before you can even pay off the one you got, you already got one that's now cost double that price. And I'm a sucker for it. I'm probably the a vendor's dream, but at the same time, I like our complement of mix that we have with the oversized press, the Anycolor, and still have a big box digital to complement us. But when that next press goes down, that's a problem. So I think in the marketplace with the promotion of those boxes, it's a really tough thing. If you're going to grow your business, you need to have some good technology that can produce the work. The mid-sized boxes are definitely an answer. Or an option. I hear more and more people getting two and three of them instead of getting one big box. I see that as a place. And today, if I was considering a backup system for the NexPress, I would strongly consider a mid-box. There's nothing wrong with that. But definitely, you can go to Graph Expo and see it's being dominated by our digital side of our industry.
Right. Okay, well, we only got a couple minutes left, so let's address a few of the questions that have come in. You know, we'll just kind of try to go through them as rapid fire as possible. Somebody wanted to know, do you guys, either of your shops do government work? Do you do any work for GPO or federal government?
No,
I
we
do
don't
not.
Do any federal work. We do some state work, but no federal work.
Okay. You know, given somebody asked, given that both of your shops are obviously in the South, are your both shops climate controlled? Is that an issue? And especially, I guess, tied in with running the equipment.
And get that consistency.
We're being in Louisiana with 100% humidity. We definitely have a high climate control. We're also vetting everything. The anti-color, you definitely have to vent. It does produce heat, but we do that as well as the NexPress.
Mm-hmm. We're air conditioned and have a humidity control system as well.
Okay. Another question came in, and I think this is referring to the Anticolor. Would you consider this press well suited for high profile projects where you see full solids like with pocket folders, or projects requiring additional spot color or strike-through varnishes, et cetera?
For us,
was that with the spot color?
Yeah, we have a five-color anti-color, so we can handle the spot color. If somebody comes in and asks me to do a five PMS colors, I'm going to tend to not want to do that on the anti-color because that means I got to totally wash up the whole press, start over, and try and go through this one job for five colors. The press is bought to do rapid fire, do a lot of, you know, jobs on and off. But I wouldn't hesitate to put critical work on it. Just remember, when you say I'm going to refer to it as agency work, we generally don't do a lot of press checks on this press because you can't bring a customer out to the press and start altering the colors. You got to get all that done on the front end of the job on the pre-press side, but the strike through varnishes and all that, I wouldn't hesitate to try those elements, different types of varnishes or coatings. I wouldn't have a problem with doing that. We run a lot of gold and silver. We wouldn't have a problem doing that as well. It's just you got to make sure you're dealing with a good file, fix your color problems on the front end, because when it gets to this press, it's moving very quickly.
Right. The question also for you, Mallory. Can the Anticolor print envelopes that bleed?
No. It's not a home press, which is does with vacuum feeding system. It needs a gripper to pull it. It can bleed off maybe the tail end, but we basically don't bleed envelopes on it. We don't do anything like that. We'll shift it over to the home press, which is a two-color press for us.
I think we are just about running out of time, but one thing to make clear, I have gotten confirmation in terms of the maximum stock thickness. It's 18 point in a standard configuration on the Anticolor, and with board extensions, it goes up to 24 point. So that's coming directly from Heidelberg, so that is the answer to that question. So I think that... we're just about running out of time, and I'd like to, you know, especially thank Mallory and Taylor. You guys both did a great job. On behalf of Printing Impressions in Heidelberg, we'd like to thank everyone for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. If you could just take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next, we'd be most grateful. Your feedback will influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. I hope to see you at the next Printing Impressions webinar. Thank you, everybody, and have a good day.